For those of you who don't know me, my name is Dave Van, and along with my wife, Laura, who's just gone out with our two little ones, Josiah and Kayla, we make up the Vans. And we have been part of River Church in Maidenhead for 14 years now. I know, we always sort of thought ourselves like, you know, we're the young ones. Everyone else has been there ages. And then you stop and think, oh my word, 14 years. Yeah, not newbies. And during two of those years, we were spent out in Cambodia. So that's kind of the context, if you like, the reason why we're here and the reason why I'm here and talking to you. And I'll explain the title, Mission When We're Worlds Apart, or also the title that I think went around in your email, which is Tales of Recovering Missionary, which I got some interesting questions about during the week. I actually want to start by honoring this house, honoring you as a church. When Laura and I set out on our mission to go to Cambodia, we sort of thought, okay, we're mainly going to have to rely on River Church Maidenhead. But actually, you guys as a church really got behind us. Quite a few of you supported us financially, signed up to our prayer letters, came and saw us off on our sort of meetings and when we came back. So we really felt the love from this place. So we just wanted to say thank you and honor you guys for that. That was really cool. A little bit about Cambodia as a background, but then I'll go on and say, actually, I'm not going to focus today mainly on Cambodia. There we are. Oh, yes. We were young once. So fresh-faced. Quite angelic in that glow as well. So this was 2008 when we went to Cambodia. And we did quite a few things. We supported artisans, fair trade handicraft artisans. So we were supporting them, working with them across the country, which is a great privilege. I also did some youth work with an organization called Young Life, which works in high schools. And Laura was supporting a group that reached out to women who are victims of trafficking. So that was kind of our thing. I'll tell you a story just to kind of give you a bit of a feel for what we were doing out there. We were really keen to go native when we went out there. We realized there's lots of other missionaries and development workers, and there was a real temptation to sort of isolate ourselves and kind of stay in a compound and just eat pasta and pizza or whatever. And so we were like, no, we want to do this properly. We want to live amongst the people. We want to try and absorb as much of the culture and get to know people and learn the language, etc. Pretty early on, we developed a really good relationship with our neighbor, and she took a real shine to us. Her and Laura got on really well. And pretty early on, she invited us to go to her hometown, which is a real privilege. It's a real honor to be invited. And we were like, yeah, we'd love to go. That'd be great. So we set off on this trek to go to her village, which is a couple of hours outside of Phnom Penh, the capital where we were. And It was pretty basic. So this is a picture of the village. I think that was maybe the neighbor's house. It was gorgeous, beautiful, palm trees, rice fields, but very simple. And we realized pretty soon that this was a special thing for them to invite us round. So at first it was like, oh, we just need to go and see and say hi to all the people in the village. But we realized pretty soon we want to go and show you off to every single person in the village. So we kind of got driven round and taken into all the houses. And it was a little bit, we realized we were kind of on show. We were on parade. So kind of this went on for a while, that's great, and then they took us back to their family house, and then I said, we have spared the best chicken for you. I just want you to know, this chicken there that's under that basket, that's the one you're going to eat. We're not going to eat that one, you're going to eat that one, the prize chicken. And I was like, wow, I'm really touched. And they were like, let me come and show you how we kill the chicken. I thought this was great. I was well into this. Laura ducked out. She's like, I'm going to make excuses. Anyway, so I got to go see the prize chicken being plucked and had its throat slit. And bleh. Anyway, you can imagine. So all of this stuff's going on. They're really making a bit of a fuss about us. And they make us this food. And then we thought, all right, we'll sit and eat with the family. You know, it'll be this thing where we're part of this community. But no, they put us on you can sit on, seated on like raised platforms. So they put us on a raised platform, put the food there, and then backed away and watched us eat. And then pretty soon we realized the whole, quite a few of the village they knew we were there, was coming as well. So all the kids came, they pulled up chairs. So literally we just kind of had this almost like little cinema experience going on, watching us eat. And I kid you not, some kids had popcorn, no joke. They were busting out popcorn, watching us eat, going, look at the foreigners, come, pull up a chair. So anyway, it was a great experience. It was a little bit of a picture of our time there, always being on, always feeling, being made to feel very welcome, but always being on show as well, always being on display. And then later in that evening, there was a funny incident where Laura needed to go to the toilet, and she was like, "So where's the toilet?" And they went over there in the fields. She was like, "Okay, so is there any particular spot in the fields?" And she goes, and our neighbor goes, "I'll come and show you." But of course, it wasn't just her. It was a whole gaggle of women came and showed Laura where to go and didn't let her just leave while she did it. Just like, "So are you going to go?" So anyway, it was good fun. It was good fun. So that wasn't what every day was like, but it gives you a bit of a feel for the time that we had there. It was a really special time, a time where we really were made to feel so welcome by the people there, and it was just a privilege to be there. Now, yes, so the context, I could have come here and talked to you all about Cambodia and told you stories and that, and we just sat down, Laura and I, and we felt that would be a little bit like old wineskin. I think the reality is it's been 9 years since we lived there, 5 years since we've been back, and although we still have a heart for the place, it's just not where we're at right now. And actually, I wanted to share with you some thoughts that we've been thinking around. What does it mean to do mission when we're worlds apart? What does it mean to live out a missionary calling when we find ourselves here in the middle of busy life in the Thames Valley in the UK? What does it mean to hold on to that missionary calling? So I just want to work through a little bit of that with you, with the help of a Bible passage. So let's go to Acts 1:4. Okay, so this is Jesus spending time with his disciples just before he ascended into heaven. "On one occasion, while he was eating with them, he gave them this command: 'Do not leave Jerusalem, but wait for the gift my Father promised, which you have heard me speak about. For John baptized with water, but in a few days you will be baptized with the Holy Spirit.' So when they met together, they asked him, 'Lord, are you at this time going to restore the kingdom to Israel?' He said to them, 'It is not for you to know the times or dates the Father has set by his own authority, but you will receive power when the Holy Spirit comes on you, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem and in all Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth.'" And that was the last words that Jesus spoke to his disciples before he was taken up. So this, I wanted just to get ourselves into the mindsets of the disciples for a moment. So I have heard really good talks about this verse around, this is all about you find your Jerusalem, it's here, and then you find your Judea, it's the nation, and you find your other ends of the world. And I like that as a principle, or I like that as a structure, but let's face it, it's not exactly how the disciples were thinking. So let's just imagine we're the disciples here. So what's going on? What is Jesus saying to them, and why is he saying it? Well, first of all, the disciples thought it was about Jesus putting their world right. This is why he had to go. This is why they were saying, "So, Jesus, when are you going to restore the kingdom to Israel?" They were still totally Israel-focused. It's a question that kept coming up as they were following Jesus. "Jesus, when are you going to kick the Romans out, restore the kingdom here?" It was all about here. So that we still get that picture of, okay, the disciples haven't really got a bigger picture global mentality about this thing that Jesus has done, this faith that they've started. And the second thing we realize is that these words are essentially Jesus reminding them of an instruction he's already given them. So he'd already given them the Great Commission, go into all the world and make disciples of all nations. And it was kind of as if Jesus really had to spell it out, because the disciples might have gone, yeah, all nations, blah, blah, it's a bit vague. So he really spells it out here. So, right, guys, here's what you're going to do. You're going to go Jerusalem, you're already there, but also you're going to go Judea, wider. You're going to go Samaria, that country to the north that you really, really don't like. You're going to go there too, and to the ends of the earth. So he's really kind of spelling it out. It isn't just about where you are, and it isn't just about the people that you are part of. The disciples needed some geographical implications spelled out. They needed that because their instincts were to stay parochial. Their instincts were to go to think about the Jewish people, to think about their people, their homeland. So these are some of the reality of what was going on when Jesus said these words. Now, let's face it. The disciples at that time, we need to give them a bit of grace, don't we? Because they probably had a pretty small map of the world. So as I was preparing this talk, I asked myself that question. Well, how big was the disciples' world? Like, what places did they know about in the world, and which ones were they completely clueless on? So, here is a map of the world as it was in Jesus' time. So, this is kind of what the world looked like to the disciples. So, there they are. Where are they? There they are in Jerusalem, about there. So, I mean, it's a pretty good-sized map, but, you know, it doesn't go any further than Portugal over there. We just about make the cut, looking a bit odd there. So there are, you know, there's essentially a good third of the world that's just not even represented. So their map was a little bit small. And to be honest, they actually had to think much broader. Jesus was trying to challenge them to think much broader than they were able probably to think at that time. They just didn't have the framework. So, you know, actually, interestingly, do you know what the disciples did? Someone tell me what the disciples did after those words, those instructions, those pretty clear instructions from Jesus as Jerusalem and Judea and Samaria and the ends of the earth. What did the disciples do? Anyone? They went and hid. Yeah, there was a bit of hiding. What else happened? All right, well, after the hiding, then the Holy Spirit came. Woohoo! Happy days, Pentecost. We are going where? Where did they all go? Jerusalem. They didn't leave Jerusalem for years. So, by all accounts, they at least didn't leave Jerusalem for 7 years. But we really can't even be sure, as in, like, for Peter, for example, he didn't leave Jerusalem until after 20 years. 20 years in Jerusalem. Now, some scholars will go, that's perfectly fine, because that was the right thing to do. The church had to be established in Jerusalem first, and they were following the prompting of the Lord. And others might go, yeah, maybe. Because the other disciples, outside of the 11, the others started scattering. Like, they started moving. But the core, the original 11, as they were, stayed. So it wasn't until after 20 years that they actually left. And even then, that was after the Council of Jerusalem, where they decided that it's okay for Gentiles to become followers of Jesus without having to convert to Judaism first. And that was very important for lots of reasons, but particularly for men, because at that time, if you wanted to become a Jew, of course, you had to be circumcised. So there's a lot of very relieved men after the Council of Jerusalem meeting. Whew, we don't have to become Jews, yes. Okay. My point is this, beware of the parochial instinct. Ask yourselves that question. Do we have some of that parochial instinct, that just natural gravitation to stay with or focus on what we know and who is like us? And I don't say that at all to diminish the amazing stuff that happens every day in workplaces, in neighborhoods, in streets, right here in Marlow, in the place where you live, in your Jerusalem. So I'm really not saying that. Please hear me. I am just raising a question, which is basically, is my map big enough? It's my first question to you guys this morning. Just want you to ask yourselves that. Is my map big enough? And obviously, in literal terms, we know what the world looks like. But is my map in my heart big enough? So last year sometime, I was our daughter Kayla sometimes struggles to get to sleep, and she gets all upset. So we were at my parents' house, and I decided she was getting really just upset but not sleeping, and I was going to, and she needed a nap, I think. So I was going to take her for a drive. This is why I used to do this, and it used to work, but probably by this point it wasn't going to work. Anyway, I thought, I'll take her for a drive. So when she was young, there wasn't a lot she would say. But now she's older, if I take her for a drive, she knows the deal. She knows I'm driving around trying to make her fall asleep. She wasn't having any of it. She was going, Daddy, you're taking me far away. It's like, no, I'm not, Kayla, don't worry. You're taking me far away. No, I'm not, Kayla, don't worry. You're taking me far away. It's fine, Kayla. You're taking me all the way to South America. That was the furthest point in her head. That was the end of her map. She was like, you're taking me so far in South America. What is the furthest point in your head? What is the sort of point where you stop thinking about being able to do something for God as part of his global mission? What is your South America? Where is the edge of your map? Or in the disciples' case, what's your Iberia? Where's the edge? And I do mean that, again, metaphorically, philosophically, where is that point where you go, that's not my mission, that's not my turf? Because the reality is, the mission has always been bigger than our map. The amazing thing is, it started really, really big. So when God gave the covenant to Abraham, he said, all the peoples on earth will be blessed through you. So even at the time when Abraham, whose map would have been even smaller than this, even to Abraham, God was saying, the whole earth will be blessed through you. And then again, he repeated it to Isaiah. He said, it is too small a thing for you to be my servant to restore the tribes of Jacob. It's too small a thing. I will also make you a light for the Gentiles, that my salvation may reach to the ends of the earth. It's too small a thing. And again, Jesus to his disciples, God just kind of keeps repeating this. He could make it really like, I'm going to make it easy for you to understand. I'm going to talk to you about what you know, and then I might grow it a bit. But he just keeps reminding people it's about all nations, the whole earth, even if they can't know what the whole earth is. So it's always been bigger. It's always been bigger than our maps. It's always been bigger than our maps. And this bigger picture, this bigger story, that is what Jesus is calling us all to be swept up into. And that's one of the things I want us all to wrestle with. What is our part in that big story, in the biggest, grandest love story ever told, the one that reaches to every single point of the earth, to every people group, to every nation, to every language, every tribe? It's always been that big. Now, interestingly, because I was interested, where did the disciples end up? So, again, this isn't necessarily relevant to my talk, I just thought you might want to know. So, even though it took them quite a few years to get going, once they did, you know, they did all right. Thomas, tradition has it, India, pretty good. Who ended up in Ethiopia? Here we are, church scholars, tell me who ended up in Ethiopia. I think it was Philip. Paul made it all the way to Rome. Others spread across what is now Georgia's. So they did get going, and actually from that small seed, it was a faith that of course spread across every corner of the globe. But those instincts, their instincts were to stay with what they know, stay small. Okay. All this bigger picture stuff is great, but I also know that it potentially can end up being a little bit chin-stroking. It can be a little bit of chin-stroking, and I just want to share with you actually what I think the core thing is that needs to come after, as alongside a bigger picture perspective. Bob Pierce was an amazing guy. Bob Pierce founded World Vision and Samaritan's Purse. You know, he got busy. But it's for Bob Pierce, it started when he went to visit one of the islands off of Korea, and he met some of the children there in really difficult conditions. And he wrote these words in his journal, in his diary. Let my heart be broken with the things that break the heart of God. Let my heart be broken with the things that break the heart of God. And that actually is crucial. We have to have a heart that beats for the things that God's heart beats for. I want to tell you a story of when my heart was broken first. So I thought about this for the talk. That is a 22-year-old me in a small village in Uganda, in eastern Uganda, and I was on there as part of a mission trip with Oasis. And we had a great time there, and it was really challenging. There was lots of poverty. It was a community that was really affected by HIV and AIDS, but beautiful people, welcoming people. It was really special. Just at the end, as we were leaving, we kind of said our goodbyes, and we were walking out the village. It's just one street, so lots of people came out to wave us goodbye. And I was standing next to our team leader, and a woman pushed herself near the front, carrying a baby. I don't know how old, maybe 6 months or something. And she said to my team leader, this lady, she said, "Take my baby." And at first, it was kind of like a bit of a hey, why don't you have my baby? And then the smile just drained from her face, and she went, "No, take my baby. He will have a better chance of life with you than he will here with me." And just to hear those words and to see her face, it was shocking, and it was heartbreaking. It stayed with us. We couldn't we just couldn't shake this picture of a woman willing to give up her own child because she knew the conditions they were in were pretty desperate and the chances of life weren't certain. And it just, for me, it was just something that just clicked in me, that just awoken me to actually God's heart was breaking at that time too. It wasn't just mine and my team leaders. It was God's heart was breaking then. So, yeah, my question to you is, have you had your heart broken? Have you had your heart broken yet? Have you been to a place or met some people or had an experience where you know, actually, God's broken my heart for these people, for this country, for this issue? You know, my wife Laura over there, she's had her heart broken for women in trafficking, and it's something that she's been working on, you know, and trying to work out for years. But I want to ask you that honest question too. Have you had your heart broken? That might be for a nation or a people group or just a wrong in the world that you know deep in your core it's wrong. Have you allowed God to break your heart? And, you know, sometimes it might be for something that, a place that you haven't been yet. I've got a strange, bizarre burden for the country of Burma, Myanmar. I've never been there. I don't know any Burmese people. God just put it on my heart. I just have this burden for this country. And every time I read about it it hits me emotionally. It's a country that I pray for sometimes when it comes up on the news. It's just a place that God has given me a burden for. And I want to encourage you guys as you go through this series to just open your hearts actually to God giving you a burden for a country, a place, even if you don't know anyone there, even if you've never been there. Actually, God can do that. God can just bang, lay that on. I want to do something, or I've considered doing something. I brought this drum with me. I know that some of you have got a burden for a particular place, and I just want to give us a chance actually to honor and recognize that. You know, tuning into God's heartbeat is a funny thing, and at times you feel like, oh, I just don't feel what other people feel for this particular issue or these people, and other times it strikes you to a core. But I just want to give us a chance to actually tune into that heartbeat. What is that heartbeat? What is that heartbeat? And who is it for? And I want to give you guys a chance. If there's a nation, a people group that's on your heart, or maybe you're just has come into your head just now. I don't want you to think like you're publicly saying you're going to be a missionary in that place. But if there's a nation, a people group that God is speaking to you about, or that you've had a burden for, I'd like you to just stand up and actually say that nation or that people group out loud. And then perhaps we could all say, Lord, bless this nation afterwards. Is that all right? Yeah. So go for it. Anyone. I know a few of you do have nations on your hearts. So say them out loud. India and Burma. Lord, bless this nation. That's awesome. Thank you, guys. Thank you for being willing to stand up and declare that. I think there's something really powerful when we declare in front of our family, actually, the burdens that God's given us, the places that are on our heart. That's so cool. And for those of you sitting here thinking, I haven't got one of those, I just want to encourage you to be open. You know, I really believe that actually as you go through this series and some of the speakers who come, that actually there will be a nation or people group that just like, bang, God just speaks to you about. So that's so cool. Very cool. I'm very excited about that. Okay. My third and final question to you is, will you go, send, or pass? So let me explain. So generally within kind of mission circles, if you like, we tend to categorize people as either goers or senders. So if you're a goer, you are a missionary who goes somewhere, who goes from the place where you are in deliberately to another place, maybe in the country or overseas, in order to live out that missionary calling in some way. And senders are the people who stand behind them and pray for them, support them spiritually, send money, etc. Pass is those of you or those of us who think, that's not for me. I don't need to go and I don't need to send. I'll just take a pass. So again, another honest question. Where are you guys? Where are we at? Where are we at? Am I going? Am I sending? Or am I passing? And I just want to talk to you a little bit about sending, actually, because that is the space where Laura and I are in right now. We are not overseas. We're here in the UK and trying to work out what does it look like to be a sender. So the amazing thing is that we live in a world with really endless possibilities when it comes to both communication and travel. I mean, think about the world that the disciples lived in. When Jesus said the ends of the earth, they not only did they not know where the ends of the earth were, but they could not have imagined how to get there. Where we know where they are, we can imagine how to get there, and we probably have ways of connecting in, even if we don't go. So those possibilities are really mind-boggling. I just, out of interest, I thought I'd look on my Facebook profile. I'm not a big Facebooker, but on my Facebook profile are represented people from 13 different countries. And apparently I'm not alone. So 900 million social media profiles have, are connected with people from other parts of the world. So we are in a much more connected world than we ever have been, and certainly the disciples are. So what does that mean for us who are in the sending bracket, who are going, okay, how do I work out being a missionary sender, a supporter? And I mean, yes, for us, there's a few practical things that we have sort of been trying to work out as a family. What does it mean for us at the moment to send and to be part of that global calling? But also, a big part that we can be actually is, first of all, our missionaries, our fantastic missionaries. So again, I just wanted to remind you of who our missionaries are. These are river-wide missionaries. There's in China. There's Sue in Hong Kong. There's Dave and Charlotte and their kiddies in Pinyin, in Ethiopia. Nigel and Karen in Germany. Andy and Val in Thailand. And Linz and Lucy in the UK. And to be honest, the whole world. Linz is flying all over the place these days. So, guys, get behind your missionaries. When they come back, go to their evenings, go to their meetings. We had an awesome time when the Pinyins were last back. We went to their house. They did a whole coffee grinding ceremony and told us stories of the community they live in and what their heart is. And it was an amazing chance for us to just connect with them and support them and really show them actually that we're behind them. And that's the same for all of these guys. And yes, financially as well, they all are in need or could do with more support. So that's a kind of obvious starting place. But also just want to let you know about a few practical resources that are out there. Operation World is, who remembers Operation World books? You know, the big meaty Bible of the world, some of you do. So basically, it's a kind of like a prayer guide for every nation of the world. It tells you kind of headline stuff in terms of demographics, what the main issues are, spiritual challenges, and what to pray for. That is online now as well, so you can go. For those of you who've like declared your heart for those countries, go and find out about what's going on in the countries, what you can pray for. Prayercast, we're using this in Maidenhead. Are you guys using this? No, okay. So Prayercast is basically prayer videos for every nation in the world, and they're really high quality as well. So we use them sort of once a month on Sunday mornings. But again, you can go online and watch them. They're short 3-minute videos with prayer points at the end. Again, just a great way of connecting into what God's doing in a particular place. Compassion, I'm sure several of you do sponsor children. Compassion, that's something we do. And again, it's a nice way for us to let our children in on what's going on and get them to think about children like them in another part of the world and how God's looking after them. But they don't have necessarily the same opportunities that they do. We've just started a new thing. So this arrived yesterday. A little bear arrived in the post. So this is something from Christian Aid called World of Friends. And basically, it's a teddy bear. For those of you who have kids, this will be relevant. I admit it won't be if you don't. But the teddy bear travels around the world and writes back letters and stories of children around the world. And so they get these mailings and follow the bear's travels around the world. Again, for us, it's just a nice way of getting our kids thinking a bit more globally about the world. And again, we can then stop and pray. So this is something we've just started with our little ones, and is quite cool, quite exciting. We also were part of something called Samara's Aid in Maidenhead last month, which is sending clothes and essential goods out to children and families in Syria and Iraq. I was really touched. I heard about this just over Christmas. We launched it in like mid-January. We gave it 2 weeks, and oh my word, I mean, the church really got behind it. We ended up having 140 boxes and bags of clothes and care packs from the church in Maidenhead, which were then boxed up and I think have just arrived in near Aleppo. So they went out on containers. But again, it was a great way for the church to respond to what's going on in the world and really tune in to God's heart for those people. So I kind of want to encourage you, for those of you who are in a I'm not going mode and you're trying to think, well, what does it mean to send? Actually, I think what it means to be a sender in this day is really, you can be very creative with it. There's so many opportunities. It's not just a, okay, give a check to a missionary, I guess I'm sending. Of course, that is one way to send, but actually there's so many ways that you can be involved in that bigger mission. And also, I should say, if you haven't gone, if you've never had a chance to go to another part of the world and be part of what God is doing there, whether through a church or a parachurch organization, please go. Please go. As in, even if it's just for a week or 2 weeks, I can't say enough how God responds to that sort of level of commitment. God will meet you, both financially giving out, but also God will meet your heart and touch your heart. There is nothing like going to get that heart, to get that perspective. So if you haven't yet, I know a lot of you have, and a lot of you are drawing on what God's put on your heart from visits, from time spent abroad. But if you haven't yet, I really, really urge you to do it, even if it means sacrificing, because God will really meet you in it. So yes, this is kind of, oh yeah, sorry, this is some pictures of the Smara's aid, so that's all of us boxing. So we had so many bags and boxes, we were at the Windsor Hall, we couldn't physically fit them all in the Windsor Hall with us, with the volunteers together. We had to do it in like three stints. It was really awesome, and always good to get your kids involved, you know. It's kind of like free labor. No, he loved it. So that's Josiah, our six-year-old son, but he really loved getting into it as well. So, there's a star. Why is there a star appeared? Ooh, okay, I don't know that. Okay, I'll just leave you with this. This is what it's all about, guys. This is where we end up. And this is Revelation, going back to Revelation. After this, I saw a large crowd with more people than could be counted. They were from every race, tribe, nation, and language, and they stood before the throne and before the Lamb. And that is the vision of heaven. A vision of heaven does not look like Maidenhead or Marlow River Church. Hate to break it to you. It looks like people from every tribe, every language, every tongue, all together worshiping Jesus. That's where we end up. So I want to just invite you into that amazing story. I want to invite you to find your part in it. That's one of the things we've been working through. Tales of Recovering Missionary is partly how do we live out our mission calling when we're at home, when we're here. And I want to encourage you guys. I believe we all have that mission calling. I believe all of us have that on us to have a mindset that is broader than just Jerusalem, and it's just here. And I want to just encourage you to work through that over the next coming weeks in the series. And thank you for letting me come and be part of that.